KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke with Luke Burbank this hour. He's going to be at the Neptune Theater on Saturday evening, hosting Livewire on stage at 8 o'clock. Right now, we're working through the news, asking questions, and learning right along with you. Seconds before last week's 7.1 magnitude earthquake that killed more than 300 people across Mexico, folks got an alert that the ground was about to start shaking. The Mexican Seismic Alert System gives people a chance to get under a desk or leave a building. And we got a question about this from a KUOW listener, Eli Waite, about this system and our own earthquake alert system. And he's on the line now. Eli, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
What got you wondering about early alert systems?
Yeah, so I grew up with earthquakes growing up in Southeast Alaska and have spent most of my adult life here in the Northwest. And during the 2011 earthquake over in Japan, my stepsister was going to school over there, and she was telling us about how the intercom system came on, warning them about an earthquake, and so everybody can get underneath their desk, and they had a countdown, and when the countdown hit zero, the ground started shaking, but everybody was safe under some sort of structure to protect themselves. Then with this quake down in Mexico, it just raised that question again, what are we doing up here in the Northwest?
What are we doing in the Northwest about earthquakes? Good question, Eli, and we want you to get an answer. So we have Bill Steele sitting in the studio with us right now from the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network at the University of Washington. Hiya, Bill.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Eli.
What do we have here for an earthquake early warning system?
So we have developed with our partners at Caltech and UC Berkeley and the USGS a system called Shake Alert. And it's now in operation here in the Pacific Northwest. It has been since April, tied in with the California system. So we get all of their data, they get all of our data. And we're issuing alerts for earthquakes magnitude 3 and above, even smaller actually, in a test mode at this point.
A test mode. So if an earthquake hit right now as I speak, would I get a text if I were to be signed up? Or would it, not yet?
Texts have too much latency.
Oh,
so I do have an app on my phone. I will get an alert. It may be a little late, and it may be a few seconds to get that alert to me. And we're working with the telecom industry and the cell phone manufacturers to make sure we can speed that up in the next generation of cell phones.
Wow. So is that the way that this alert would go out? Ultimately would be cell phone related, not just like some siren or series of sirens?
And that's one of the ways, but it's going to be a variety of ways that it goes out. Right now, we're also doing pilot projects with businesses and industry that can utilize shake alerts to very rapidly improve their resilience in the seconds before the earthquake waves arrive. So they're actually turning off valves or preparing to turn valves off on reservoirs, cut power to pump stations, do a variety of things in real time with our alerts.
Okay, so tell me about this audio. This is audio of our state's pilot version. And I'm going to play this. It's 14 seconds long.
Okay.
And I've got to say before I play it, an earthquake is not happening.
Yeah.
This is not an actual earthquake. This is just the alert that you would hear under this program. Here we go.
Earthquake. Earthquake. Moderate shaking expected in 5 seconds.
Not really. It's not happening. Okay, there's no earthquake, folks, but that's the test. Is that still?
That definitely sounds like Skrillex put that together. Was that dubstep? I mean, the thing is, as the world ends, we'll be listening to some great quality tunes, so that's a silver lining.
Right.
Yeah, so that was that's our user display that we have our pilot users and many major companies and city and state and local agencies are participating. That comes up in their operations center and gives them that alert, and it shows a map of where the earthquake is and where the P and the S waves are at any given time.
The Puget and the sound?
Yeah.
The
primary and the secondary waves. The primary wave is a sound wave, and it doesn't shake you violently, but it carries a lot of information about the earthquake, and it travels at twice the speed of the dangerous S wave that follows.
That's convenient.
Yeah, by characterizing the earthquake with the P wave arrival and then pushing out at the speed of light an alarm to people, we can get ahead of the earthquake waves.
Okay, so one more question that I want to check in with our listener and see if we've answered his question, what else he wants to know. But I want to recap because we've said a lot. There is this app that is not yet available for the average citizen, or it already
Correct.
Is?
No, it's not a yet. System yet. We're not fully funded yet, and we have some gaps to fill in the network.
Okay, so you'll have an app, and you said there's other announcements too, because not everybody has a cell phone. What other kind of announcement, what other ways will we have of getting this?
Well, we're working with LA Unified School District, and we're going to be working with two school districts in Washington this year to be able to send alarms through the PA system to tell kids to get in a safe place and duck cover and hold on when an earthquake waves are coming.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with industry to be able to lower cranes and get workers in safe place, get their hands out of dangerous areas before the shaking begins. And there's going to be a whole garden of different applications for this technology.
Okay, listener Eli, you started all of this with your excellent question. Did we answer it? What else do you want to know about an earthquake early warning system here?
Yeah, so that's great information to have. On the Shake Alert website, I saw that there was a goal to have a limited public alert system set up for 2018, for next year. I was wondering, what's the status on that? Are we going to see at least a limited public alert system roll out next year?
Yeah, I'd say optimistic. I mean, the Shake Alert software is working beautifully. Our data exchange is working really well. I think what we'll probably see in Los Angeles County and areas where they have really dense, strong motion instruments and an extra year of working with their partners, they might do a limited public rollout, say with LA Unified School District or another pilot there. We probably here in the Northwest most likely will expand our work with water districts and wastewater districts and areas where we have some experience and expand that out. But in the near future, we're going to be getting more public.
Bill, stay here. Eli, thanks for your good question. I hope we answered it for you. Thank you.
Yes, perfect. Thank you very much.
KUOW listener Eli Waite there wanted to know about an early warning system. And Luke Burbank and I are still curious. Why are Mexico and Japan so far ahead of us on this? We've got quakes.
Yeah, because they lost thousands of people. It's been tragedy that has spawned the drive to earthquake early warning systems. In 1985, Mexico lost 5,000 people from a magnitude 8 offshore, similar distance from the one a little bit closer than the one we had 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. But it really amplified, those waves were amplified by the lake bed and the ultra-soft clay-like saturated clay soil under Mexico City. And thousands of people died, 134 school buildings collapsed. And they said, enough, we're going to set up an earthquake early warning system. In 1995, the Kobe earthquake struck Japan and caused over 5,000 deaths in Japan and Kobe. And they said, enough, we're going to set up an earthquake early warning system. Well, now it's our turn. I mean, we have the technology, we have the know-how, we can do it, but we have to have the political will to fund the system to be able to do it. But if we can do it before our major disaster, then that's a great thing.
Are we sort of a little bit of a victim of the success of people like you who've advocated for different standards for how things are built and infrastructure? I mean, we've had like the Nisqually quake. I was here in this building. I was walking to the printer when the Nisqually quake happened. I hid under the printer, which turned out to be a very safe place.
I immediately went looking for you. What's the difference between you and me? I want to make sure you were.
And I've always remembered that, Bill, and I appreciated it to this day. Mm-hmm. But miraculously, nobody died in that one. And you even look at the Bay Bridge quake, which was terrible, and people did die. But we haven't had an event in a while that I can remember that's on the scale of the ones you've described, Bill. And some of that must be because we do have buildings that have been retrofitted. It's just luck?
Yeah.
Shaking his head wistfully.
What's the shake alert on Bill Steele's head right now? Doubtful?
Unfortunately, it's just luck, okay?
Really?
Those two Mexico earthquakes were both in the descending Cocos Plate as it slid beneath North America, just as the Nisqually earthquake occurred in our descending slab under North America, the Juan de Fuca Plate. That could have been a bigger earthquake. It could have been right under Seattle. It could have caused much more damage, and we could have had hundreds of casualties.
So it must be hard for you, though, and others to really not to make the case, but to get, like you said, the political will behind this, because we have been lucky, right? And so maybe we've become somewhat complacent?
I'm afraid so. I think the Nisqually earthquake, because we did survive and we had limited damage, that people got a little complacent and said, well, good, there's a big earthquake, we survived it, we're good to go. But we have much bigger earthquakes, much worse ground motion in our future, and we have a lot of untested or very fragile infrastructure, including a lot of unreinforced masonry buildings. And what's pretty obscene in my book is still we have a lot of school children in a lot of those unreinforced masonry buildings.
Well, I just read in the Seattle Times, I'm sure you're aware of this because you're an advisor to this process, that the state of Washington doesn't seem to be spending the money to do the seismic retrofitting, the kind of expensive measures. The state doesn't seem to really want to take those measures. Is that right?
Boy, will and doing, they aren't doing it. Whether they would like to do it or not,
irrelevant.
It depends on what party you're talking about or what group.
But
it is true that the governor wanted to see something done to improve the resilience against earthquake damage in Washington after the really big one article came out, and we had the...
In the New Yorker.
Right, and we had the big earthquake exercise for the Cascadia subduction zone event. And so what he tried to do with existing resources is say, what's the low-hanging fruit that we can do something to improve resilience and then also get some larger scale projects we can bring to the legislature and try to get funding for in the future?
I looked at that list, and many of the things on the list are things that I think need to happen, but I have to say it was slightly underwhelming. Some of the items were like, well, let's have a meeting about how we could try to improve some things. It was a lot, as you mentioned, Bill,
A pamphlet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, these are things that need to happen, but it didn't feel like they were trying to figure out the things that didn't cost money that they could do.
Although, isn't that what governments do? We, like it or not, we do not put an infinite value on human life. I've heard of federal agencies valuing a human life at $6, $7, $8 million because it's not infinite from their point of view. They decide how much to spend to save how many people.
So there was a three-phase evaluation step after we've picked priorities. One was, is this really important? And there was a 1, 2, and 3. Is it expensive or cheap? And is it easy or hard? And they were all weighed equally, and they all had 3 points. So if you had something that was absolutely critical to get done, but it wasn't easy and it wasn't cheap, it fell off of the recommendations and ended up in the appendix for future evaluation.
Bill, I've been listening to you for years on KUOW and always really enjoyed your knowledge on this topic. I'm wondering, what is the situation at your house? Do you live in a totally reinforced, like, concrete bunker? Like, what does the guy who knows more about this than anyone do to try to keep himself and his family safe?
No, I don't. I live in a 1906 house in the U District. I have bolted it to the foundation, and I've taken the chimney down because I'm down below the roof line. Actually, I took it all the way out through the center of my house just to get rid of it because it moves differently, and I got a ventless heater, so I didn't need it anymore. So, you know, we have water and food set aside. We have a family plan, but I put money into try to making my house a little more resilient rather than buying insurance.
So you don't have earthquake insurance?
I don't.
Wow. And Santa Claus can not visit you anymore.
Yeah, right.
So
may not be a good idea, but I'm pretty handy. And as I said, I did a lot to strengthen my house.
Bill Steele in the studio today. He's the Director of Outreach and Communications, University of Washington, Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. And the governor's sub-cabinet, to which he's an advisor, will present its report to the governor tomorrow. Bill Steele, great to see you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.